And I remember that being a moment of like me going, am I bi? Like, how do I stop this?
Hello, my name's Kay Anderson, and you are listening to Lost Spaces, the podcast that mourns the death of queer nightlife. Every episode, I talk to a different person about a venue from their past, the memories that they created there, and the people that they're used to know. So sometimes on the show, we talk about spaces that my guest went to religiously, and they have stories built up from years and years of partying and socializing and dancing and getting into all kinds of trouble. And sometimes, as is the case with this week's episode, we go to spaces that my guest only really ever went to once. But it was still enough time for that experience to be hugely influential for them. And so, although we do not know the name of this week's bar, or exactly what city it was in, or whether or not it even is a lost space because we don't know enough details about the bar, we do know that it was somewhere in Arizona, that it was a country bar, and that it had a huge impact on this week's guest, David F.M. Vaughan from the queer parenting podcast, Gaytriarchs. So in this conversation, we talk all about the overlap between queerness and southernness and how sometimes it feels those things don't align, the beauty of being in an unpretentious bar, and the fear of going to queer spaces on your own and being judged horribly by those vicious, vicious gays. Shall we get into it?
I was an actor in a touring show.
Of what?
It was called Dr. Doolittle. It was a musical.
Oh.
And yeah.
Were you the doctor or one of the animals?
I was one of the animals. I was Toggle the horse. So no big deal.
Ah. You were like both the front and the back of the horse.
Just the back. No, wait. No, just the front. Excuse me. Just the front. I was just the front of the horse. I was just like having to remember. Yeah, no, it was the front of the horse and there was a girl who was the back.
So was someone like sniffing your butt the whole time?
Mm-hmm. Her name was Erin and that poor girl had to sniff my butt for 2 hours a day.
Oh, hi, Erin. Sorry to hear about that. Hope things are better now. Okay, so you were on this touring production.
Yes. I spent the first 15 years of my kind of adult life as a professional actor doing, you know, Broadway and tours and film and TV. And I had done, I think, 5 tours. And anyway, I was on one of these tours. And this was the second tour I had ever done. So I was pretty young. And the first thing I would do in every city was, where's the gay bar? Right? Where are the gays? And touring is a really interesting sociological experiment because you're doing a lot of the same things every week, but in constantly switching the location. So just, you know, public transit, how people act in movie theaters, gay bars, food, all that stuff is just, it varies very differently from city to city, especially in such a big country. So yeah, that's why I was in Arizona.
Okay. So then every town you hit, you'd be like, right, where's the gay bar? Gonna go and wet my whistle.
Yeah.
Is that a thing? Wetting a whistle?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm going to go and like sightsee. Stepping into those gay bars every single time, what would typically be your approach?
So I grew up in the rural South. So I had a little bit of, still had a little shame on my shoulder, even though I had been out for many years as a gay man to my family and friends and my coworkers. You just kind of still sometimes carry some of that shame with you. So I almost never would go by myself. There were other gay members of our company. And so there would be a group of us who would always like to go to the gay bar. So I would always go as a group. The thought of walking into a space like that, totally alone, that I had never been to, I think still today at 44 fills me with dread in a way. Because there's this assumption that I'm going to walk into a space and everyone's going to turn their head and look at me and laugh because I don't know what I'm, you know, there, I don't know why I feel that way. But so when I would be on these tours, I would always go with the two or three gays that would be consistently going out. And so then it felt, you felt very powerful, right? Walking into a bar with your friends. Because, you know.
But then they're not like super weird dynamics because they're your coworkers. And so you can't go off and suck someone off in the toilet without them knowing.
Well, who says that? I toured quite a bit, so it always depends on the culture of the people you're going with and stuff. And so, yeah, sometimes you would go out with a group of friends, and it was like this is fun. There's girls with us. Kind of, let's go to the gay bar and dance on the tables and then go home. But you know, you'd always have like your one or two kind of go to gays who you're like, hey, tonight we're gonna go, if you know what I mean, out. And then they would kind of be like, okay, got it. And then there was just this assumption like, hey, I'm going with this guy. If I'm found dead, now you know why. I'll see you in the morning. You're like, great, right? There's no questions asked there. I remember I was on a tour in Europe. We happened to be in Barcelona at the time. And we were out at the bars. And our friend goes, I'm going home with this guy. I'll see you guys later. And we were a little nervous because we were not in our home country. And the next day he shows up and we're like, so what happened? He was like, well, this guy drove me like 2 hours to his house in the middle of the wherever. And my heart, I mean, listen, he's alive now. He's telling me the story, but I was like, oh my God, that car ride must've felt terrifying. And he was like, it was the loveliest night, but you know, it was terrifying to me. Right. But yeah. So I think the going into the night, you kind of go, who am I with? Are these people that like you can say, you know, we're going to go into the showers and let's all just keep our eyes on our own paper. Or if this is just a kind of like, let's be silly tonight and get drunk and have some vodka sodas and watch a drag queen.
And so going in with other people and feeling that kind of heightened bravery because they've got your back. What happened then? Did you usually like split up and go and talk to the natives? Or were you more like, I'm just going to kind of stick with my clique?
I think first was always drinks, right? Like, let's all get that first round in us. Let's get that drink in our hands so our hands can be busy doing something and we can just kind of survey the land. Usually we'd be going for some sort of event. So it's a theme night or it's a drag show or drag bingo or something fun like that. But, you know, we always would have one of the gays that was the friendly, I'll walk up to a stranger and introduce ourselves.
And that gay isn't you.
That gay is not me. I am an outgoing, friendly person. But in new gay spaces, like I said, this kind of weird shame would always come over me. And I would always be a little frightened in those spaces. Like I didn't belong or it's the same reason that like drag queens scare me a little bit, even though I love drag queens. I love watching Drag Race and I get it. There's this power of like they could make fun of me. That I think is maybe pulled from, being a young person. And so I think I walk into those spaces sometimes feeling like, are people going to make fun of me? This is, obviously, this is my therapy session. Thank you so much for this. But I think that's why subliminally is why in those spaces I'm a little less outgoing when I don't know anybody there. I don't know what the culture is there. If we started dancing to a Britney Spears song, would people be laughing at us? Would they be joining in with us?
Which Britney Spears song? I think it depends.
Oops. The only one, because I know all of that choreography by heart. And I think it's important that your listeners understand that.
Okay. All right. You can teach me when we finish, right?
For sure. We'll do that. Yeah.
And so going out, the motivation, let's say, was to let your hair down and let off steam at the end of a working week. It wasn't to sample the goods.
I mean, can it be both, right? Like first one, then the other,
right? Primary motivation.
Yeah, listen, with apps and the internet, like if you're just out there to bed somebody, that can happen much more efficiently with just a couple of swipes on your phone, right? But I think the primary reason was always like, let's get to a gay space where we can just let loose, have some heavy drinks and laugh a little bit.
Some heavy drinks.
Well, gays have heavy pours. Those gay bartenders, their wrists, they pour pretty heavy sometimes. So yeah, I think the primary motivation was just to like blow off some steam, especially when you're in these like conservative areas of the country where you're just like, God, I just want to be gay out loud for a second. You know what I mean? I just want to be visibly queer and just relax.
I want someone other than Erica to sniff my butt.
I like, come on, like stop sniffing my butt, girl. I need a stranger from Memphis to be sniffing this butt. Yeah.
So you end up in Arizona, mm-hmm. and you go to a bar.
So for some backstory, I grew up in the South, and the American South is varied, but in general, it's a very conservative culture. It's very racist. It's very sexist. It's very homophobic. It's all the best qualities of being an American. But part of that culture is also separating that. There's also Southern culture of like a particular accent, a particular food, a particular way of dressing, country music. And so all of those things, the bad things and the good things, were kind of part of my life growing up. So I'd always had a fondness for, you know, cowboys and country music and line dancing, all the kind of like benign aspects of Southern culture. And when I became an out gay person, I was a little sad that I feel like I had to lose some of that, because I was kind of having to kind of denounce my Southernness because it's so problematic. And it was such a negative part of the world that all of it went with it. So when I was touring, I started discovering these gay country bars. I just got shivers just thinking about it. I was like, oh my God, I didn't know that I could be gay in this space. I didn't know that I was allowed to be gay and do these maybe predominantly Southern/straight things. And so when we were in Arizona, and I tried to Google this, I tried to figure out where it was. I could not remember if it was Phoenix or Tempe or what. But there was a bar. It was a country line dance bar, but it was a gay bar. And it wasn't just like country night or gay night. It was a 7-day-a-week country line dance bar for gay men. And I just like walked in the door and I was just like, oh my God, this is what I wish growing up was like. Like, this is what I had always wanted, but it wasn't allowed, obviously. So it was really magical to walk into the space and see other gay men who liked country music, who liked line dancing, who liked those aspects of the culture, and were visibly gay and were doing, you know, making out or holding hands or, you know, sniffing each other's butts in the back room. I never considered that a space like this would exist. I just, like I said, when I kind of came out, I just was like, oh, fuck you, South, you know? So it was really, it was incredible.
Let's pick up a bit more on this. Mm-hmm. The denouncing of your Southerninity. Mm-hmm. Your Southernness. So, yeah. That's really interesting to hear. So when mm-hmm. you were figuring out that you were gay and you came to the conclusion that you might be, were you living in the South?
Yes. I was living in Florida at the time.
And in order to process that, you had to compartmentalize it and put it to one side.
I think it's what a lot of people who grow up religious feel when, where they kind of have to throw it all away. It's hard to kind of pull out just the bad parts and keep the good parts in order to heal or move forward. It's just easier just to dump it all. It's part of why I moved. As soon as I graduated college, I moved to New York City. I wanted to be an actor. And I think it was 2 weeks after I graduated, I was up there because I just wanted it all behind me. But looking back with more mature eyes and a more mature point of view, I can compartmentalize better and go, yes, here are the bad things and why they're bad, and we don't want those. But here are the good things that got unfortunately attached to the bad things, but are maybe good inherently, or just can be good, right? A lot of people don't like country music, but like it can be good, and it doesn't have to be racist or homophobic or a part of those things. But at the time, I think I was just like, this is where bad stuff is. Let's get to the good stuff, which is obviously an overly simplistic view of it. But, you know, I was, you know, 20. So that's...
Yeah, and you were surviving.
Yeah.
Can I ask if you remember the moment you realized that you were gay?
It's so hard because perspective muddies it up a little bit, because there's the looking back, I can point to specific moments in my life where I was like, that was the gayness in you. And you
seeping out.
But you did, yes, just like throw pillows shooting out of my eyeballs. But the like conscious part, I don't think there was a big moment. I do just remember, it's getting a little graphic, but I do remember as a senior in high school, catching myself staring at the crotches of men walking by and having to consciously tell myself to keep my eyes up and to not let my eyes drift down, or somebody's going to see me and say, why are you looking at my crotch? And I remember that being a moment of like me going, am I bi? Like, how do I stop this? And so maybe that was the moment I saw the kind of, you know, the avalanche start or whatever. But, you know, I remember the gay avalanche. It's fabulous. I remember as a child, you know, not child, but like, you know, middle school, maybe in late elementary school, lingering too long at the underwear section of the department store and the pictures on the boxes. Like we all have, I think every gay man has that experience. But it wasn't conscious. I wasn't looking at it thinking like, oh, I want to have sex with that guy.
Because he was just a torso.
You don't know what I'm into. But, you know, there was something there drawing me. And my pituitary gland was firing and my, you know, my body was changing. And but that's looking back. But I think the consciousness was probably like late high school where I was like, maybe I'm bi.
Do you remember then the leap from, oh, no, I'm not bi, to I'm a homo?
Yeah, it's hard. I don't know if there was like a official check moment, but I do remember there was an unnamed friend who I had kind of experimented with. And it was always in the tone of ha, 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 like these characters we were playing, like, wouldn't it be funny if we blanked? But it was never us doing it. It was always like us laughing as if like this was a game we were playing. It was very childlike, right? We're talking like early teens. Mm-hmm. And I remember a time where I suggested, I was like, we should make out. And this person was like, oh, no, I don't want to do that. That's kind of gay. And me feeling like, oh, that's all I want to do right now. Like, I so badly just want to kiss a man. Mm. And him very much having the opposite reaction. Like, we're just like, you know, playing sword fighting and we're doing like silly stuff. And I think to him, it was less of a gay thing and more of a maybe just a boys playing around thing. But I remember at the time being like, oh no, but am I? Because I really want to make out with this guy. So maybe that was it. I don't actually know. Nobody's asked me that question.
So what was the time difference between you coming out to yourself and you coming out to your parents and other people?
Fully, like I would say out loud, I am a gay man, and not just like maybe I'm bi or maybe I just want to maybe have sex with one guy once.
Suck a dick and see what happens.
Yeah, just see what happens. I say that to everyone I meet on the street, just to see what happens. I would say just maybe a year or two, because I had been going to college as a straight person. I'm straight, air quotes, for those of you listening. And then I got a job performing in a show in Las Vegas. So I left college. Then when I came back from Las Vegas, I knew then, I just could feel it in my bones. I was like, I'm gay and I'm too afraid to go back to this college and all my friends and all my fraternity brothers and all the things and just say, I'm gay. And like, so I decided to transfer colleges and I went to a college 4 hours north. At the time, I think I said because they had a better program, they had a better musical theater program. But the real reason was like I needed to start over in a place where literally nobody knew me. And I could just start as, hi, I'm David, I'm gay. That to me didn't feel overwhelming. The thought of going to each person in my life and saying, hey, remember that whole straight thing I've been doing for 20 years? JK, right? And so that filled me with dread. So the only way I felt like I could do it was to move. So I just moved to do that.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so being a theater major, which I'm assuming you were, you're nodding, so that's good. Were you not exposed to more gayness? Did that give you any perspective on the gays?
Not really. Honestly, there, like, yes, there was a lot more gay people in the theater, but none that were out. Well, I'm talking high school. None that were out. There was one out guy in my school, and he would get jumped multiple times a year. And so there was the fear there, but it was definitely, I think, partially why I found a home in the theater was that it was this kind of, you know, refuge for scoundrels kind of a deal, right? Where everyone was allowed, so you felt safe. But, you know, there's also a part of people, I think, when you're in the closet for so long, that there's an ego thing to having to turn the thing that you've been trying to prove to people for so long around and say, you were right, I was gay the whole time. And so I think that, you know what I mean? There was a little bit of ego there. But it wasn't until I went to my second college, where I had planned on coming out anyway, that there was an out gay person in the program. And there was a lot of them. But, you know, the first college I went to was a commuter school, it was very small, and it was still in my hometown. So it was not the kind of college utopian experience I wanted. And then I went to my second college. It was quintessential college. Dorms, fraternities, sororities, football games, queer culture. It was like everything I wanted in a college. It was a really good place for me to do that. But I remember I had a friend once that was, somebody was saying like, are you gay? And I was like, I'm not. And my friend was like, you know, you can tell me if you are, because she knew. Do you know what I mean? Like she was like, bitch, I'm on to you. And I didn't even have the strength to say it to her when she was being so kind and welcoming. But there's this thing that happens, I think, when you're just like, you have this ego, or I had this ego. I'm like, no, stop challenging me on this. Let me do it, you know? That's why when people come out later in life, and I'm always, they go through adolescence again. And it's hard when you're 45 and you're going through adolescence again. It does not look cute. We have all seen the 45-year-olds at the bar dancing with the twinks and doing meth in the bathroom. It's like, that is not a cute look, but they have to go through adolescence again.
No, let's not be too judgmental.
Sorry. All of those things are good things. But at 45, you don't want to have to fail publicly that way that we do when we're 16. That is, you're supposed to do, right? So I think I was lucky that I came out at 20, which I think is old. I wish I had been. I had friends that came out when they were 13 or just never had to come out. They were just always gay, which I think is the new generation, which is awesome. Like, if you're not pansexual and genderqueer, then who the fuck are you? And to have that be the space that kids can grow up in, and obviously some kids can think they're one thing and then change, but the fact that that space exists now for kids where, sure, you can be gay and you can say you're gay and then actually not be gay, that is helpful for the actual gay kid. And so I just, that is a new part of younger culture, which I really, really love. But going back to your earlier point, I didn't feel like, oh, I'm in the theater, I can just be gay and authentic to myself. I did not feel that.
Yeah. And maybe that wasn't my question, but I think you have answered my question, which was around, were you not exposed, wrong word, but were you not exposed to other gays? And then that kind of influenced your perspective. But yeah, I think you've covered that.
I mean, I had two gay uncles who would never say they were gay, and the family would never call them gay. And they lived their entire lives together. Their whole lives. They died in their 90s, and they were friends. And nobody could say it. So that was my only experience with gay people. And everyone like joked behind their backs, oh, they're gay, they're gay, they're gay. That was my gay experience. So the shame aspect of it, the lie that this is my friend and stuff. And I think that was the stuff I had to break through. And that's why I had to kind of just like move to just be like, I gotta peeling this off me bit by bit feels like too overwhelming. I just want to jump into the pool, you know? And boy, did I.
Expand on that.
I'm being silly. Sorry. My podcast is very silly and very stupid. So I apologize. I'm trying to button up for your very elegant, beautiful podcast.
Wait. You said you'd listen to some episodes.
Yes.
So what are you saying, elegant and beautiful?
Well, you're much more elegant than me. How about that?
Me?
But when I went to... Yes.
What episodes did you listen to?
But when I went to college as a gay person, I immediately went to the bars, I immediately got online, I immediately started exploring sex and all the ways it is, dating and holding hands in public. And I just did all the things all at once. I just dove right in because I had been so eager to do all of this, and I just held it in. So I was like, I was in this safe space, right? I was in a college town where gay people were cool, and I was in these M for M chat rooms, and I was going to the gay dance bar, and I was, you know, it's doing all the thing. I was getting my heart broken, and I got to do all of that within a period of, you know, 2.5 years of being at this college. And so that's what I mean by like kind of diving headfirst.
Okay. So let's go to the bar.
Okay.
We don't know the name of the bar. It is a bar.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give me a bit of insight into what the day before going there would have involved?
On my schedule as an actor, it was usually Tuesday through Sunday. And so if we were traveling, it would be traveling on a Monday, and our first show would be Tuesday night. We'd have just evening shows, and then weekends were really hard. There was always two shows on Saturday and two shows on Sunday. So if I ever went out, it was usually on a Sunday night, if I had the strength, or it was like a Monday night, which is a really odd time. But it was really my only day off, and it just depended on my energy level. So this particular day, going against what I had said before about going with a group, I don't think anybody wanted to go with me. Somebody ended up meeting me later that night, but I took a cab from my hotel room to this place. I found it on Google. I just Googled gay country bar, and this one popped right up. And I looked at some of the pictures, and I was like, it looks like a gay country bar. And so I remember it was very cold, and I got in my cab, and they drove me, and I got out, and there was this shallow but wide parking lot right in front of the building. I was very nervous because, again, I don't go out by myself very often. Mm-hmm. And like I said, for whatever reason, I assumed as soon as they opened the door, everyone would turn and look at me and start laughing.
And did they?
And they did not. And they never have. That's never happened. Oh, but I still am waiting for it to always happen.
You mean this irrational fear is totally irrational?
It gets even crazier than that. I chose at the time, now I'm a full-time director and writer, but at the time I was a full-time actor. My job was to stand on stage in front of thousands of strangers multiple times a week and perform for them to either clap or boo or hiss or whatever. And that never bothered me. The thought of going on stage and people laughing at me or failing or whatever never to this day has really crossed my brain. But the idea that I could walk into a bar and somebody might giggle because of the way I look or fills me with dread. So you can unpack that later, maybe on your own time.
On my own time? Well, yeah. I don't get to ask follow-up questions.
Oh, no, please. Yeah, no, I don't want to waste your time.
Does this non-embarrassment of being on stage apply to you, the individual, or is it just relevant to you when you're acting as a character?
Yeah, the character part is interesting. Actors feel more powerful in their character than any other times, right? Because there's a distance between you and the viewer, which is the character, right? Be it the costume or the makeup or the whatever, or just the fact that you're saying somebody else's words or moving other people's movements. So there is a distance that you get to kind of, like, I'm just this character. So you laugh at the character, even though it is inherently you. Yeah, I don't know. And I think also, most of my life as I perform has been a form of entertainment for the viewer. So it's supposed to be enjoyable and they tend to enjoy it. I've never done stand-up. I can imagine stand-up is probably hard for that because I bet some audiences don't enjoy your...
I can't imagine doing stand-up. It must be terrifying.
Yeah, because you can't blame anybody. It's just you on the stage saying things that you would say. You're not a character. I mean...
Yeah, you know. Yeah. And... because the audience are cued in to be horrible to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You kind of, yeah, you just have to kind of ride the wave, but mm-hmm. still, you must go home and be like, I am the dumbest person in the world after a bad stand-up gig.
Yeah.
So where are we?
So I walked in the front door, and there was this...
Oh, no, you didn't answer my question.
Oh, what was your question?
About whether you're okay with being yourself on stage.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I've spent so much of my life in a performative point of view when it comes to being on stage that I don't even know what that would be. Like, I remember I accepted an award. I won an award for screenwriting, and they announced it, and I was in the audience, and they said, come on up. And I didn't know that that was going to happen. And I walked up on stage, again, a place I've spent the majority of my adult professional life, and it was terrifying because it was just me accepting this award. Part of it's also just like, you know, the weird self-indulgence of it, being like, look at me, I just won the award, I'm the guy. But
I have no one to thank because I did all this myself.
This is totally me. Yeah. But like, you know, it was just me. So yeah, I don't know if I love that. I remember trying a stand-up class one time in my life and being like, yeah, no, this is not for me. I do not enjoy this. I like performing in characters and putting on costumes and stuff like that. So,
and do you feel the same sense of funny going into other spaces or just queer spaces?
Oh, you mean like self-consciousness?
Yeah. That's a better way of saying it.
Yeah, no. I think way less, because I think there's less, maybe it's stakes, right? Maybe there's less on the line. Maybe I care in a queer space. I want people to like me. I want people to think of me as one of their own. I want people to be attracted to me. And if I enter a straight space or wherever, I'm like, you guys can go fuck yourselves. I'm just here for a good time. So maybe that point of view is what kind of fuels it all. We all want to be attractive. We, you know, I grew up as kind of like a chubby, weird looking kid. So like, maybe that's part of the root of all this, but like, yeah, I definitely feel a sense of power going into non-gay spaces and a sense of self-consciousness going into gay spaces, depending. Now, if it's like my neighborhood gay bar or something like that, then sure, that's very different. But yeah, new spaces for sure. It feels very like eyes on me and should I be doing something and do I fit in here, where I don't feel that way in a sports bar or whatever.
Mm. Okay, so we've just got to the bar. You've walked in. You're mm-hmm. on your own.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me the feeling of being in this gay country bar.
So I remember it being relatively quiet when it comes to like attendance. There was mm-hmm. maybe 10 people I could see. So the first thing I remember was there was like this horse. It's like maybe from a carousel or something. And it was like wrapped in like Christmas lights. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing that. And I remember this guy at the bar, which we will come to very soon, sit, like kind of leaning up against the bar, who like kind of turned to me and smiled when I walked in. And yeah, that was kind of my initial thoughts walking in. I felt less scared because it was less people. There was country music playing, which I thought was kind of cool. The people were dressed, you know, in the wares, right? Jeans and flannels and a few cowboy hats, which was really cool. And I just thought, wow, okay, the space exists. This is cool.
And so there's not many people there.
There's not a lot of people there, no.
But there is a man who seems to have caught your fancy.
Well, so here's the interesting story about this man. He ended up being very influential to me in a way in my future. And I'll tell you why. So at some point I ended up back near the bar by him at some point. This is after I have maybe kind of loosened up and gone to the dance floor and had a drink or two. And he was talking to his, like another person, but he was signing using American Sign Language.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized quickly that he was deaf. And I had rudimentary sign experience. I knew the alphabet. Hi, my name is David. Probably that's the end of the list. Maybe a few cuss words. And so he kind of turned towards me at one point, like kind of like smiled and kind of said hi. And I kind of trying to like meet him where he was at, signed hi, my name is David. And then he got really excited and his eyes just like widened and he started kind of signing really fast to me. And then I had to kind of slow him down and be like, I actually know very little. I'm so sorry. And he was good at reading lips, but I wasn't good at reading his signs. And so there was this just excitement and hunger to talk to somebody. And he was putting it on me. And I was trying so hard. And I just, I spent maybe 5-10 minutes with him. Very sweet, but the communication breakdown didn't work very well. I ended up wandering kind of somewhere else at some point. And then for the rest of the night, I would just catch him. And he was always kind of at the bar, like seemingly waiting to talk to somebody, waiting to have a conversation, waiting to kind of communicate and be social. And this ASL deafness was limiting that in this space. And I remember having this overwhelming feeling of, unfortunately, the word was sadness or pity or whatever, that like he didn't get to talk to the guys that he wanted to. He didn't get to move about this space freely and as easily as I did. And it hit me so hard in a way because I felt his loneliness. I felt his eagerness to be a part of whatever conversation was happening. So I made a kind of silent promise to myself. At some point, I wanted to learn ASL in an effort to, in the future, if I ever ran into a person like this who so desperately wanted to kind of talk to a stranger for a couple minutes and maybe make out in the corner, that I would at least have the, I could communicate with this person. So I ended up in the future, many, many, many years later, I was doing a show on Broadway, and I and three other cast members, we hired a private ASL tutor, and he came to the theater twice a week. And we just spent a long time learning ASL. And it was all kind of inspired after this interaction with this guy at the bar. And I think I tapped into his loneliness. You know, we all feel lonely at different parts of our lives. And I remember feeling that in college at certain bars, you know, not being the hot guy. So like kind of witnessing other people matchmaking on the dance floor and going off and, you know, to the darkness. And so I kind of connected with him in that way, but I couldn't talk to him. And I eventually just kind of walked away at a natural point. And it just like, it felt very heartbreaking to me. Mm-hmm. That was such an influential moment for me that it made a difference to the rest of my life. And of course, this guy doesn't know it, and he's probably very happy and doing lots of other things. But yeah, it's a very influential moment for me.
Mm.
Stumped you.
No, I want to pick up on, but I want to ask it in the right way, the feeling of sadness or pity for, mm-hmm. for that person.
Mm-hmm.
And projection, and like how we can often project onto people things that might not be
100%.
There.
Yeah, he might have not have been sad at all, but there was this, like his whole body lit up when I started signing to him. And there's just that look of, you know, there's always the look at the guy at the bar who's so desperate for somebody to talk to them. He's just mm-hmm. constantly trying to make eyes at every man he can, hoping one of them will come over. Usually me, but so I think that's why I put that on him. Of course, I will never know what he was actually feeling at the time, but him not having the opportunity to talk to some of these people at that time, just it hit me in a way where I was like, that's not fair. Why don't I know ASL? Right? Like I learned Spanish living in Florida because that is a very common, that's something I should do. So yeah, he probably was like, who's this idiot with a weird shirt coming up to me? I hope he leaves me soon.
Oh, let's talk about you being the desperate one at the side of the bar. I think that's kind of interesting.
I'm half, like all jokes, I'm half joking and half truths.
Oh no, but we've all fallen into that, right? Where you're making the situation worse for yourself by appearing very desperate.
Oh yeah.
And you can't get out of the spiral.
Yeah. One of the spaces that first popped up when I thought about this prompt, it's not a gay space, but is connected to these stories, was when I was a teen, like a preteen, so like 12 to 14-ish.
You were in a bar when you were a preteen?
Well, yes. So there was a country line dance bar in my hometown, a very rural part of Florida, next to a Skyline Chili and a strip mall. So it was a tiny little dive bar. It's called the Neon Moon. And it was a country line dance bar, but it was just for teens. It was no alcohol served, you know, open at like 4 p.m., closes at 9 p.m. It was specifically for teenagers. And it was one of those spaces where, you know, you're at that age, like your hormones are raging, like your body's changing, everything is different. And I remember there was, you know, at the time, I was straight. Of course, I was never straight, but you know, I playing the part of a straight man, and I was so desperate for girls to like me, and no girls liked me. And I remember we were dancing, and there was this really tall girl, and she had really curly brown hair. I remember her being like just gigantic, beautiful, but just really curly, long hair. And I just so badly wanted to dance with her, but I was not brave enough. I was so embarrassed, and I was, you know, that age, you're just like, oh, everyone's looking at me. Again, there's a theme here. But I just was like, I was so overwhelmed with like this girl is like the coolest girl. I so badly want to dance with her. And I, to this day, will never know what came up over me. But I just at one point stood up and I walked right over to her and I said, hey, do you want to dance with me? And she said, yeah. And we did a slow dance to the song Neon Moon by Brooks and Dunn. And it was like one of those moments where I was like, I am a king. I am a god of gods. Look at me. I walked up to this beautiful woman. I asked her to dance with me. She said yes. And I'm slow dancing. And every motherfucker in this bar is watching me dance with a girl I've been talking about all night. And I just remember feeling like so powerful, you know what I mean? Like I did it, you know? And then I was like, there's something missing. What is missing here? Oh, a penis. So, yeah, but.
So back to that bar in Arizona. What else do you remember from that night?
I remember going line dancing. You know, line dancing is, unless you do it all the time, there's a certain amount of kind of learning you have to do. And it's just a repetitive certain amount of steps that probably repeat 10 to 20 times inside a song. So you got to kind of quickly pick it up. And I just remember having so much fun, standing kind of on the sides for the first couple of rounds, learning it as I go, and then kind of jumping in and starting to feel kind of freer, you know what I mean, about being in that space and being visible, because it was this kind of level playing ground. We're all doing this stupid dance that's not interesting at all. It just repeats and shifts. And I think that's what I liked about that bar so much, and those bars in general, is that the cruisiness and the expectations and the side eyes are so much lower, I have experienced at those kind of bars, than they would at maybe like a high-end Manhattan gay bar in the West Village or something.
Because everyone's too focused on their dance moves.
Everyone's focused on their dance moves. Also, it just doesn't, that world doesn't lend itself to like elegance and refinement and that, you know what I mean? It's dirty. It's rough. It's silly. It's just silly. It's a poor man's kind of culture, really. And
yeah,
so,
but if it's dirty and rough, those are pretty good prerequisites for flirting.
Sure. But I guess what I mean is that the arrogance is so minimal there that I feel more comfortable. When I say not cruisy, I mean, there's definitely people fucking in the backyard. But like, what I mean is that like the cruisiness doesn't feel so intense because there's a friendliness and a joy aspect where I feel like a lot of other bars can have this like withholding, everyone just kind of waiting for the other person to move, where here everyone's dancing, everyone's kind of sweaty and their hair doesn't look great. And that I like. And that's kind of a common theme in a lot of what I write and my own podcast and things is getting to the realness of people, because the all of the positions we hold and all the masks we put on to me are very boring, and I'm always so eager to kind of get to the good stuff. And so I think what I loved about that bar was like I felt like I got to the good stuff in a gay bar, which just I wasn't thinking about if my shirt was tucked in right, or if my stomach was hanging out, or if anybody was looking at me as much. I was definitely thinking about those things, but as much because I was dancing. We were all singing loudly to a song. We were drinking cheap domestic beer. It was, there's just so much more joy in that space than I had expected.
Yeah, that's lovely. I love when you're like dripping in sweat and looking a terrible, terrible mess, but you don't care because you're so free and you're having fun.
Yeah, and then if you're dripping with sweat and the hot guy you're flirting with is dripping with sweat and you guys make out, it just, doesn't that feel better than just stuffy...
Well, how sweaty are they? I don't know.
Well, yeah, so we can adjust the dials as needed, of course, but yeah, there's just like a realness to it that is very attractive to me versus like the plasticness, what I feel sometimes in other gay spaces and the colognes and the perfect hair and everything is just, I feel like I'm in a museum or in a high-end department store that I don't belong in, versus this is like my space. These are real people. Everyone's having fun. I am very attracted to that because like I said, I just feel like I'm getting to meet the real people here and not the weird little, you know, robots we put in front of ourselves sometimes to meet people at first before we decide if we're going to let them get to know the real us.
And then they realize they don't like the real us because they fell in love with the robot. Yeah.
And they're like, oh, no, bring me back the mask. I liked him way better.
Yeah, that might have happened to me once or twice. But so I know you're not saying that it's like a binary of like every non-gay country bar is pretentious and every country bar is like a wonderful utopia.
No, not at all.
But do you find that the majority of non-country bars are pretentious?
No, but what I do feel is that most bars in general, you are there to see and be seen. There is a show quality to it. There is this like presentational aspect to it, right? You generally go out to meet other people, to find a mate for the night or whatever. And so there is this like, I'm looking at you, you look at me, we're judging each other, we're deciding if we're clear the bar to move on to the next step. And that in general, I don't love. Now, I'm not saying that's the same for all bars. I'm not saying that's not like a lot of that is me bringing that shit in, right? Like when I go to maybe a hoity-toity bar with my friends and I'm just there to hang out with my friends, I don't give a fuck about anybody else, then yeah, I have that kind of freedom. But I think if I was going into these spaces alone, I imagine the point is to meet other people. And so I think the dancing, the kind of niche community of like gay people who like country music makes it feel like you're already part of a family and some of the stakes are a little lowered there. I also live in New York City, and New York City is very, very about fashion and status and wealth and how many commas do you have in your yearly salary. And that is just so anti everything that I love. So I think that's part of it. But there are Midtown gay bars that I love that are not that way. A lot of it's due to size. New York City, it's just a lot of things are very small. So a lot of the gay bars are 500 square feet, 1,000 square feet. So there's not as much room for all the baggage that people can bring into these spaces. And especially if it's like a kind of a dark dance bar. I remember Splash Bar in Chelsea was really fun, and because it was so big and it was just everyone was dancing everywhere. So I didn't feel that sense of kind of judgment walking into those spaces. So maybe dancing is the key. Maybe it's not country music. Maybe it's just like just dancing freely
and sweatily.
And sweatily, but just enough sweatily, not too much.
I mean, come on,
just like a little dew on the forehead, not yeah.
So then, if you think back to David when he was on that tour, where he was the front end of the horse, and he was going from town to town, finding the local gay bar and showing up and having a look around. If you had an opportunity to talk to him on that night that he was going to the unnamed Arizona gay country bar, what words of advice would you give him?
I think I would say, remember this night as an example of living your life as authentically as possible is going to yield the best version of you. It is going to be the key to any sort of happiness in your life. And this night will feel like, oh, I can live authentically as myself, whether or not the parts contradict themselves, and that you are not alone in whatever that means. And that particular way was country music and all of that, plus gay, which I didn't think existed together. But I think it will become a theme in your life to... Your authenticity is always going to get you further. It's always going to feel the best. It's always going to yield the best results. So watch what happens tonight and remember that. And also, you're beautiful and you're the skinniest you'll ever be, and have sex with everybody you can.
After listening to this week's show, do you have any inkling of what this week's mystery bar is or was or could be? Or do you want to share memories from your own experiences of queer clubbing or nightlife or spaces in general? Well, if the answer is yes to either of those, there are many ways you can get in touch. So first of all, I have on my website, lostspacespodcast.com, a section that is called Share a Lost Space. And if you go there, you can tell me all about a lost space from your past, or leave the breadcrumbs of what this mystery Arizonian space could be. Or it is just as easy to reach out to me on Facebook or Instagram, where my handle is Lost Spaces Pod.
Find out more about David by having a listen to his podcast, which is called Gaytriarchs and is available wherever you stream podcasts. Or you can also follow him on Instagram, where he is at DavidFMVaughan. If you enjoyed this episode, I would really appreciate if you took the time to subscribe, leave a review on your podcast platform, or just tell other people who you think might be interested. My name is Kay Anderson, and you have been listening to Lost Spaces.